Your speaker this evening, Wesley Arthur Pomeroy, has had a great hand in shaping the policies under which the Justice Department operates today, and he's had a real hand in the practices and policies which will guide the Justice Department for at least the near future, if not for another several years. Your speaker is a man who's began in 1941 in law enforcement in California, his native state. Started with the California Highway Patrol, and with an interruption of brief service with the Marine Corps during World War II, he returned to law enforcement in the San Mateo County Sheriff's Office, where he's had responsibilities for patrol work and investigation work and a wide variety of administrative functions. Eventually rose to the position of under-sheriff of that county. And when the Justice Department needed a man who would understand the problems of coordinating law enforcement problems, he was chosen as Special Assistant to the Attorney General in March of 1968. And many people noticed the manner in which he performed, and it was no surprise that he was appointed by the President as Assistant Administrator, one of the two Assistant Administrators who, with the Administrator, led the opening months of the Justice Department's Office of Law Enforcement Assistance. He's had a wide range of experiences over the last several years, both in terms of starting this federal program and building its relationship with states, as well as serving as consultant and task force member for a number of special purposes, which included developing procedures for the protection of public buildings in the Federal District, Washington, D.C., member of a special task force, in fact, in charge of it, which functioned in Chicago immediately upon the assassination of Martin Luther King, a participant in the Steering Committee for Civil Disturbance Directorate that functions as an ongoing unit of the Pentagon. He's an investigator, an instructor, an author, and a discussant. A man who is articulate and sensitive to the needs of law enforcement, broadly spoken, and who's relied upon by many people who have active responsibilities for conducting operating programs across the country. I hope and expect you've got a privilege tonight, as I do, in hearing your speaker review some outstanding developments from a survey of community relations programs that have been operating in some cities across the country, and practices and principles that are very germane to your conference of the last several days. And therefore, it's a pleasure to offer you the Honorable Wesley Arthur Pomeroy.
I ought to quit while I'm ahead. An introduction's going to be a lot more ornate than my talk is going to be. Thank you. Honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, it's a real pleasure to be here for several reasons. There's no question in my mind but that this series of institutes with the NCCJ participation has made more impact over the years on good, effective community relations than any other project or effort in the United States. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm also glad to be here because I have a particular interest in police community relations, and I did when I was a local law enforcement officer and a local law enforcement administrator. I have a special reason for being glad to be here because I wasn't sure I was going to make it today. The plane was about 3 hours late and we just got here. I almost spoke to you in my sports shirt and soft shoes. The talk I'm going to give is not a speech. It's just going to be a talk, and we're going to discuss some things together. And I'd like to encourage you to ask me questions afterwards, or attack me, or don't compliment me. We don't have time for that. If there's anything I say that stimulates conversation, we'll have a little time for that afterwards. You are the professionals in police community relations. You're the people who are on the line, and you're the ones who know what are happening out on the street. So I just want to talk to you about the state of the art. When I was asked to come here, and I talked to Lou Radelet, he told me that he would like for me to talk about what's going on in police community relations, to talk about bright, innovative, creative programs in community relations, and come and report to you about it. Well, it's been almost a year and a half since I've been operational out in the field, and I didn't trust my own reaction, so I decided that members of my staff and I would go around and look at some community relations programs and see what they were like for ourselves. I wanted to reorient myself and test the validity of my feelings. We asked several authoritative sources, people that we thought should know what community relations programs are throughout the United States, to tell us what the 10 best ones were, they thought, and we promised not to use this in any kind of a grading process, and we used this list to go and look at programs. We used the large cities particularly because we were limited in time. We didn't make a survey, we just went around and asked questions and got impressions. In some jurisdictions, we made only cursory kinds of contacts because we could only spend several hours in the city. In others, we spent a great deal more time. We talked to people on the far right, and we talked to people on the far left. We talked to people who were members of the John Birch Society, and we talked to people who were members of SDS. We talked to street people, and we talked to militants, and we talked to Uncle Toms, as well as policemen. We asked several questions. One, first of all, what do you have in community relations in your city? Well, I want to tell you another reason that we went around personally, is because we wanted to see how it really was, not how people said it was on paper, because I played that game myself from the other end. I know there's a lot of difference between writing it up for publication and what's really happening on the street. First of all, we asked, what is your community relations program? And we got a pretty good overview of what was going on in the city. Then we asked, what do you have going for you that you think is really doing well? What part of your program is really working? Then we also asked, do you have anything that's reaching the people that you really ought to reach, the hardcore kids on the street, the people who are most difficult to talk to, those that are most hostile and seem to reject communication? Then we ask the fourth question, how is what you are doing in your department viewed by the rest of the department? Now, I want to emphasize, this is not a research program. We're just getting impressions. So I'm talking about my impressions of what happened. We got through with all this. We intended to make a list of the bright new programs. Well, I didn't make a list because there aren't any bright new programs. There's some good things going on. There's some good things happening in some cities and some states, but there's nothing new happening. And wherever we find a success, it's not because of a program or not because of a plan or not because of administrative support particularly. It's because you have some particular policeman or some particular community person, or some combination of these, who is honest, and who care, I'm talking about honesty in human relationships, and who cares about what he's doing, is able to establish some kind of relationship. One city has has a particular rank of officer assigned to each one of their sectors, each one of their station houses. Out of this large city, there's one of these people who is really doing a good job, in the opinion of his peers and of his supervisors. And he's not doing it because he has a different program. He's doing it because he's able to relate to a community organization and to do it in an honest way and not let himself be used for inappropriate police community relations purposes such as intelligence gathering, this kind of thing. We have a program in another large city which has lots of promise in it, where 20 policemen each week are asked, each of them, to select the three toughest kids on their beats, and with these kids go spend a weekend of rapping, so that you have 20 policemen and about 60 hardcore kids. But there's no evaluation built into it. There's no continuation built into it. The only reason they have the program is because they had the chance to grab about $36,000 of federal money, and so they had to do something with it. So we don't know if it's going to be any good, if it's going to have any lasting impact, and even if it is, we don't have any hope that it'll be continued. Now, I'm not criticizing the people in community relations. I mean this to be supportive, because as I go along, I think perhaps you'll see some of that. But I'm just trying to tell you what the impression is. I want to emphasize one thing right now, and it should be obvious. We couldn't cover all communities, and there must be a lot of good things happening throughout the nation that we didn't see, and that we don't know about. But we did cover some large cities, and that's what I'm talking about now. I want to emphasize again, if the program was good, if something good was happening, it's because of the individual, not because of some structured program, something that somebody bought out of a book and transferred from some other department to his own. I think one of the problems, and I think we're losing ground, I think I'll try to figure this out and try to figure out why. One of the problems, of course, is that we have this increasing polarization of black and white and a stiffening of attitudes throughout the country. And that can't help but make community relations efforts less effective. I think another thing that's happened is the community relations organizations in many police departments have really become part of those organizations, part of the institution that won't change, and we're starting to do business in a routine kind of a way, forgetting that the program is not programs on paper. It is not the mechanics. It's people dealing with people. We're forgetting that. Now, here are some things that we found out. In most all of the cities that we visited, there is a lack of administrative support. Now, that's a generalization, and what I mean to say is that some departments have fairly good administrative support, some have very poor. But even in the best, it isn't good enough. Now, this is an old problem. I'm talking about old problems, but I think maybe we better start reexamining what we're doing. In some departments, there's only token commitment by the police chief or the superintendent. In others, there's outright dishonesty. One chief told me that his community relations program was the same as an intelligence unit, and that's the way he regarded it. Now, I can argue about that if you don't believe that's an improper use of community relations, but I won't bother to do it because I think many of you will agree with me. In every department we visited, we found that the community relations unit was not accepted by the rest of the department. It seems peculiar that we, in our efforts in community relations, have been so concerned with some parts of the outside community that we've forgotten our own community. And it's so basic. If the rest of the department doesn't buy what we're doing isn't doing any good. Every one of the community relations units we looked at and the people we talked to in them said, we don't have the respect of the rest of the department. In most of them, they were hostile to community relations efforts. So I submit that one of the major problems of a community relations unit or community relations programs in police departments is to find some way to involve the rest of the department in what you're doing and make their acts consistent with yours and vice versa. If a community relations unit is putting on a good face and is doing some good things, but it constitutes maybe only 0.5% of the department, which is kind of generous at that, and the rest of the department is doing something else, I submit we're better off with no community relations unit at all, because it's just false and it's given a false impression. Now, in most of these large cities now I'm talking about, the role of the community relations unit was not clearly defined. It seems rather incredible that with all the emphasis on planning and the need for good direction and community relations and other things, that the community relations program, which is so vital to peace in the community, or at least so vital to getting people in the frame of mind so they won't fight with the police, they'll fight with someone else anyway, that we ought to at least define the role of the community relations unit. I found, and I think that we all know about this, that we haven't really defined what community is. We haven't found out what the community is that we're in. I don't see how we can logically design a community relations program if we don't know what we're relating to. I think it's incumbent upon every department that cares about community relations and is trying to set up a unit or trying to run one that they develop a sociological profile of the community they're in. That doesn't mean that we have to engage in long, detailed research programs. It doesn't mean that you really have to do more than just sit down and talk with our own people and a few other people and the community people and make some pretty good guesses about what kinds of dynamics you have in the community, what kind of social dynamics there are, and what kind of people there are, and how you relate to them, and how you are part of the community, or how we are. Of course, the other side of that coin is more difficult, and that's defining the role of the police. But we should try to do that. We should try to figure out what we're all about and what kinds of general aims we have in a city. It's particularly difficult because society gives the police so many confused messages. Right now, we have a wave of support for police, something that's kind of new to us. And we're inclined to feel happy about that, because we felt so unloved for so long. Well, I don't say that we shouldn't accept the approbation, but we ought to take a look at it and see whether they're really approving of us, of police in general, or if they're approving of some things that some police are doing or some things that they think police are doing. They may be liking us for the wrong reasons. And all I'm talking about is now that we should have the ability. We should take the bull by the horns and define what our role is going to be. Because nobody knows better than the policeman and the people in the community what the community is. I'm reminded of something that a man in Watts said after their riot in 1965. I remember that year particularly good. Some of the other years kind of fade and merge into others. Because I was attending an institute here in 1965, and I was sitting at a table, one of these round tables, with a captain from the Los Angeles Police Department who said, "We'll never have any trouble in Los Angeles." And I'm not throwing anything at Los Angeles, because we've all said that. We've all been surprised. We've all been amazed when something blew up in our face. I'm just telling you why I remember that date. But I'm reminded of what a man in Watts said after the riot, and he said that many things, but he said, among others, we're absentee here. Everything here is absentee. The landlords live someplace else. The storekeepers live someplace else. The teachers don't live here. Nobody is here. Nobody lives here except us. When the sun goes down, there's nobody here but us and the police. So I think that the police probably should try to define their own role using their internal kinds of knowledge. And I think you might come pretty close to a valid definition. About the only direction that many community relations units are getting from their administrators is go out and be nice guys, get the heat off of our back. Now, I'd like to suggest, and this has been said before too, I'd like to suggest that the police are the most appropriate people in our society to be agents of social change. We know what's going on in the street, and we're able to talk to people uptown. We're able to translate, and we should. We should start telling people uptown how we think things ought to be operating where things aren't going so well. You know, we get hung up, the police and minority people, we get thrown in the same kind of bag. And it's our own fault. We don't have to. There are issues about housing, education, employment, and now disorder on the campuses. None of these are police problems. None of them should be police problems. But somehow, the rest of society gets these problems off their back and make it a police problem, and the police and the minorities end up out in the street fighting, and everybody else is off the hook. Now, we ought to be smarter than that. We ought to be able to do something about that. The minorities and police have a great deal in common, and I think perhaps we'd be better off if we really took that kind of an approach and started working from that kind of a base with the idea that we are going to do something about conditions that should not exist. I'd like to suggest that some of us stop being so careful, too. As policemen, it's awfully hard to leave security. But I'd like to suggest that if you're in a hot kind of a spot like community relations is, and you know it's hot, and if you're really doing your job, you feel kind of lonesome about it. But if you really care about it, and you want to stay in it, start making a little noise and saying what you think ought to be done. Let's not be so careful. It's only a job. There's lots of opportunity outside. Law Enforcement Assistance Administration is going to grow, and it's looking for bright policemen and bright correctional people. Every state agency is crying for good people. You can make more money outside, I think. I haven't been outside yet, but I'd like to say let's not be too careful. You have the same kind of decision to make that a chief does when he's in a city, and that is worry about staying there for a long time or feel independent enough to make decisions and not care if he stays there very long and hope to make some change before he leaves. And you might be surprised. Your chief might want to know some of the things that you haven't been telling him. It might be that he needs to know it and he deserves to know it. If he wants to use it, okay, that's his decision if he doesn't want to use it. But he ought to have the opportunity to learn, to have it. Now to the community people, I'd like to ask you, I don't know what your attitudes are, but I'd like to ask you wherever you are in your cities, in your communities, that you try to improve the police service. And I'm not saying you should cop and think out and you shouldn't criticize bad police practices if that's the way you feel, or those are the issues you think are important. But take a look at the department in a positive kind of a way. I'm assuming that you want the police department to remain. Look at it in a positive kind of way and see how you can help improve it. There are a lot of policemen who want to improve their departments. There are a lot of policemen who want to do a better job. And those are the ones who are particularly hurt when the department is attacked and these guys know that they're not doing some of the things for which you're attacking the department. Look for the good stuff in there, too. They need your help. If you think of the alternatives of what we have now, they're pretty frightening. The kind of the way we're going, unless we find some leavening kinds of influences, are towards some very kind of autocratic kinds of police organizations, towards some very strong military types of organizations. And this society can't afford that. I'd like to make one other suggestion about improving the police department. You want to change it, get into it. And encourage minority group people to get into it, too. I know it's hard. We all know it's hard. Those of us who are trying to recruit minority people, and certainly those of you who are minority group people, know that you're taking on a big burden when you join a police department. But if you really want to change an organization, you get inside it and change it. Everybody knows that. The communists know it. Any good organization man knows it. That's a way to change it. The outside hammering away at it, it's not going to change it half as effectively. Here are a couple of problems. They're certainly not all of the problems with community relations, but some of them. And that is in our training programs. We have a lot of talk about training needs, and I guess we have a lot of good faith attempts to meet training needs. But most of the training programs, insofar as community relations are concerned, are totally, woefully inadequate. And all it takes is just a little common sense to figure this out. How can you change a lifetime of attitudes in just 40 hours or 20 hours or whatever you call it of community relations, which may not be very effective training anyway? A point was made by one of your participants before I came in here. I was just shooting the bull with him. And it's a very good one. He said, community relations should not be taught as a subject. It ought to be in everything you teach. And all of your basic training, all your recruit training, all the in-service training, and the training that we don't have and we need probably just as much, and that's for management training. Another mistake we make in our training is we go through a training program and we change some attitudes somewhat, and we think they're going to stay that way. The men are sanitized now. Community people and police are talking a little bit together now, and it's going to stay that way. Well, that doesn't meet the test of logic very well either, because I know in our community, the one that Tony Pozo and I know about in East Palo Alto, California, the turnover in residence is 20% a year. After 5 years, it's conceivable, although this doesn't happen because some of the people stay. You could have an entirely new population, and your own men change too. And in addition, the kinds of stresses a policeman are working under today, particularly the young guys that we're hiring today, who are just as, I was just as young, but it just seems they're younger today. The kinds of things that these men had to meet every night, things that we didn't have to meet when I was a patrolman, are going to stiffen the worst kind of attitudes because he's meeting this kind of stuff every night. And what I'm saying is any training program, no matter if it is expensive, to be effective, has to start and keep going and keep going and keep going. And I think to be really effective, it ought to involve police and community people working together on problems that actually exist in that area in which they live and work, with a response by police administration and by city administration that the solutions they offer are going to be implemented and changes can be made. Now, that also builds in this police as a change agent. Someone submits a program like that, it might even get federal funding. I mentioned this before. In the community relations business, we're given an assignment, said to be nice guys, and left out on the limb. In effect, we're made political Uncle Toms. We're window dressing, out there busting everything we have to try to do a good job. We're making friends with community, not so many friends with policemen. And all we're doing is putting up a front. Because so someone else can say he's defused the situation, he's cooled it. Everyone starts thinking about cooling it about now. They forget about it when it's really cool during the summer. And that's true of community relations efforts as well as total community efforts. You know, everyone scrambles to get jobs for the kids that are going to hit the street as though it were a new thing. They hadn't had all winter to think about it. I think it's okay to defuse, and I think it's okay to cool it, and I think it's all right to do as good a job as we can. But we need to have the basic problems changed or we're not going to get anywhere. The most we can hope for is to persuade people not to fight policemen. We can't prevent disorder. We can't prevent people from lashing out when they feel they're hurt and they're aggrieved and they have problems. And I think we're fighting a losing battle. We can't hold the line much longer in these kinds of ways unless we can persuade our city and county and state administrations to make the kind of changes they have to make. And the rest of the community, too. Somehow give them some idea that they have a stake in what's going on. And I'd like, somehow, again, we have to get the rest of the department to share the load that we're taking. because it's too much for just a few men to handle in one unit. Now, I've tried to indicate some possible directions we may take, and I suppose the negative ways to get to what I think is satisfactory police-community relations. And there are no specific programs. There are no magic words that will do the job. As I've indicated, I think we have to attack the basics. Role definition, internal commitment, and attitude problems. Again, there are many fine projects in operation, but their apparent success is due primarily to the personal talents and ability of the individuals involved, who seem to be succeeding in spite of their formal programs, rather than because of them. If we want continuing accomplishments, we must rely more on calculated planning and less on the availability of rare talent. And I suspect that a lot of that rare talent is right here in this room. And it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm proud to be with you, and to a certain extent, you have my sympathy. Now, are there any questions? Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. Picking what out now? No, you understood me all right. Well, let me see if I can get out of that easily. I only talked to a couple men that I thought were Uncle Toms. And they were telling me what they thought I wanted to hear and what the chief wanted me to hear. And maybe it was an unfair sort of a designation. But on the law of averages, I'm going to pick up one or two if I talk to enough people. So that's about all. I'm not going to judge you when I talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Any man who's on the street has got a lot going for him. Right. Yes, sir. The question was, what's the Department of Justice doing about changing the attitude of police throughout the United States, police chiefs particularly? Well, we're not doing very much. And I don't know what the prospects are for doing it, to be perfectly honest. We're having a series of conferences now of police executives, and these are chiefs and upper management police personnel. And they're talking about a couple of things, two subjects. One is campus disorders. Another is internal management problems. And this internal management really relates to how do you control your police in a tough situation, particularly if you have outside forces that seem to chip away at the authority you have to control. That isn't changing many attitudes. There is a collateral result where these men are in a peer group situation, and where they're finding out from their peers that it's all right to have the right kind of inclinations. But it's not the kind of thing I think that you were talking about. Last year, we had a series of 14 conferences on prevention and control of civil disorder, and we held these throughout the United States. Now, this was started in January and went through May. And in those, I think those conferences did some good, but I wouldn't be able to tell you how much. It got chiefs thinking about prevention instead of just control, and it sent them home to plan on how to prevent and how to control appropriately without overacting or underacting. I would not rely on the federal government or justice to do this for you. There's money there, but You know your community better than we do. You know what your needs are. And that's where the problem is, and that's where the solutions have to be. I'd be suspicious if someone from Justice starts telling you how to do it, because we don't know that much about where you are and what you are. Yes, sir. Oh, I visited, we visited, several of us visited. I can tell you some of them. New York, Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Tucson. Those were a few. Some of them were doing some fairly good things, and some of them weren't. And there were some things that said they were being done that weren't being done. Comparatively, some were doing quite well, but nowhere is the job really being done. That's my opinion. Yes, sir. No, I don't mean that at all. I didn't mean that the polarization is so strong and that decisions are being made in those kinds of ways so that we don't have any hope for solving our problems, our police community relations problems. I think I said that they're made much more difficult because of this. Another point you started with, I didn't get this impression from just talking to people from the far right. I got this impression from what everyone had to say. It's harder to talk to one another now than it was a year ago or 2 years ago. But it's not impossible by a long shot. And I'd like to say, I don't want to be dreary. I don't want to be bleak. I'd like to say that we have to work harder. We have to understand that we're not really reaching the problem now, and we have to go home and we have to start analyzing where we are and what we have to do. And we have to start thinking again in pretty simple basic terms, that all we're talking about is people dealing with people. And we're talking about some pretty basic common values. We're talking about honesty in discussion and in commitment. And we're talking about just these real basic kinds of things that get dull talking about. Stop thinking about the fancy programs and about getting some gimmick that's going to work, because it isn't gimmickry, it's just people dealing with people. And if policemen and community know each other, I mean really know each other in a personal way, they're not going to fight each other. They might be working together in some pretty exciting kinds of common causes. Yes, sir.
Sir, most policemen who are working in community relations detail are aware that most police administration and chiefs are sleeping at the wheel. Is it possible for you in your position to wake the chief up and let him know what's happening?
Well, as to sleeping chiefs, the question was whether or not we could wake them up and let them see what's happening. I know a lot of chiefs throughout the country. I worked those conferences on disorder, civil disorder, and a lot of them do care about community relations, but they're not getting the right kind of dope. You know, there are a lot of levels between the chief and the down the line, and you can get short-stopped at any one of them. The most important guy on to a patrolman is his sergeant, because he's the one who decides what's going to happen to him. And you can go right up the line. There's all kinds of blocks you can get, or changes in policy translation as it goes down and goes up. I'd suggest that I'm not going to advocate bypassing chain of command unless it's necessary. But I think you ought to make sure your chief knows what's going on and tell him what you think should be done. Maybe he hasn't heard it before. Maybe not really getting it. Yes, sir.
Well, I'll have to disagree about the chief not knowing.
Well, some chiefs do that. Once in a while, a chief will do that. Tom Redden in Los Angeles took a great deal of time to get out on the streets and to talk with people and make himself available. But it's not an easy thing for a chief to do that. I think you're right. A chief ought to make himself available to community and ought to himself find out. But it takes a very high commitment and a priority in terms of allotting time to do that, because he does have a lot of things coming in on him. And maybe needs education, too. There was a question here. Yes, sir.
Assuming that the Justice Department is somewhat creative, what restraint do you feel from either the Hill or from the executive branch of government for this defensible process?
Not for me, it isn't. Assuming Justice Department is creative, what constraints do we feel from the Hill and from the White House as the policy direction? Well, there are some. There's a little change in policy, and that is the new administration sees the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration as one of the entities that will implement policy from the White House.
Sir.
Yes, sir. I'd like to, just a second, I'll finish with this one and I'll be right through, okay? And there is a tendency to listen to the Hill too much right now. That's the way it is. I don't think it should be that way, but it is. Yes, sir. I don't hear your question, sir. I mean,
I said, don't you feel that if the police officer and you move it up to the chief of police, don't you think that the government should set up a test, a civil servant test, that the chief would have to take as a guideline that he had to deal with? Because I feel that the chief of police forgets that he's out to serve the government instead of the government.
The question was, did I think that, I assume the federal government should set up standards that a man should have to meet in order to become chief of police? No, I don't think the federal government should do that. I think the community itself should decide what kind of chiefs it wants, and the community can decide what kind of a chief it wants. You know, everything happens at the local level. It doesn't happen in Washington. Yes, sir.
How can the community decide what type of chief to elect under the present system?
Well, the question was, how can the community decide what kind of chief you have under the present system?
No, not what can you have, we know that. What can to have?
All right, what kind to have? Well, one way, and probably the best way, is to get political power. I don't know, well, you know, I don't know what city you're from, sir.
It's really immaterial. I'm a police officer.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how and what the public or the community can do, as you say, to select the right type of chief of police.
At home, can sort of break down this hostility and sort of find a way to get to work with the rest of the department.
Question is, do I have any answer for breaking down the hostility in the police department or the community? Suggestion. I really don't have any suggestions. I think that a strong commitment on the part of the man who runs the department is going to make a lot of difference. If rewards are given for the right kind of action in a department, whether it's you're encouraging them to get education or do something else, promotions can be based upon these kinds of performances. I think the commitment of the chief is very important. But I can't give you any, you just have to work at it and analyze your problem and approach it the way you would any other kind of a problem. Isolate the dynamics in it.
Sir?
Did you have a question?
In your speech, you said local police departments and join our ranks.
Well, I think you can look at a few police departments who have been successful in recruiting minority group people. Washington, D.C. has had some success, and I think they may have more since they've made some changes in their selection process. Baltimore has had some success. And that's, it was a part of your question I didn't understand. I think you asked how we can put them in positions of trust. Did you say that?
No, I say, how to get the minority to put their trust in the local community police departments and join, because
okay.
I was just wondering if the Justice Department recognized this problem and had come up with any type of solution, how to build up this problem.
No, the Justice Department really can't do it. You have two realities you're dealing with there. One is one reality, and two that are under it. One is a distrust of the department by the minority group community. They either distrust the department because it ought to be distrusted, or they think it ought to be distrusted. And the last one is just as bad, is just as strong as reality, because a belief is what people act on. So the only way you can attack that problem is that it's a hard way, is to find out why the department is distrusted, why they think it is not relating to community, why it's not doing the right kind of a job, whether it is or not. Find out why that belief exists, and then do something about changing it. And it's tough and it's hard, but that's the only thing I can suggest. And Washington isn't going to come up with any answer, because they're not there. And I'd be suspicious if they tried. Yes, sir. The question was what? Do we supply money for tanks and guns?
Right.
Nobody's bought a tank, not with LAA money.
That's the SIO.
And there is a lot of money allocated to community relations. Most of the hardware that's being bought with federal money now is for radios and communications equipment and information systems. Yes, sir. Our funds are administered in two ways. 85% of all the action money is administered through state planning agencies. And these are agencies that are under the general authority of the governor of each state. 15% of the action money is administered directly from Washington by the three administrators.
How does this money drift down to the local department?
And how does the money get down to state level? I mean, to the local level. Well, sometimes it isn't easy, but we're trying to make it easier by this kind of a thing. Each state planning agency is required to have a certain composition. It's required to have a strong representation of local people on the state planning agency board, which makes the decisions about where the money goes in that state. It's also required to have a balanced representation between police, courts, and corrections, because law enforcement is defined in its broad sense in the Act. There's also a requirement, and it's a very strong one, that there be a comprehensive plan for criminal justice for the entire state developed before action money will be allocated. That obviously is impossible this year in the length of time we had. So what we've said is we want the outline of a plan, and then we'll go from there. It's required that 75% of all federal money that the state gets from our program is made available to units of general local government. So those kinds of safeguards have been put in there. Now, right now, it doesn't seem like there's very much money, because when you spread it all throughout the nation, not one individual department gets very much. Yes, sir. What would I consider you need for an all-American, okay, police community relations program? You asked me what I would do if I could fantasize and get everything I wanted, okay. First of all, I'd want to run the department so I could do what I wanted to do. And I'd want to have the license from whoever hired me, whether if I'm a sheriff, of course, that's easy because I only have to go every few years to the electorate. If I'm appointed by a city government, I'd want to have the assurance from them that I have the license to do what I want to do in administering that department, not only in community relations, but in terms of vice, organized crime, patrol deployment, and the whole thing. And the understanding that if I can't do my job, they'll get themselves another boy. And then, I think it should be said loud and clear, first of all, work out with your own department what the aims of a community relations program should be. Work with them to see what the community is and what they think their role should be. Give them a piece of the action in developing the policy. And when you get this kind of staff work done with you and for you, to make the kind of decisions you think should be implemented in getting police and community together. And this would be involving every member of the department in community relations in some way, in appropriate levels, captains and inspectors, all the range up and down. And then making promotions on the basis of policemen dealing with people in the right kinds of ways, because we're in a people handling business. And the better we handle people, the easier our job is. And also, I think this would be very important for a good community relations program, that you have a well-defined plan for mobilization and control of civil disorder. And this be clearly worked out. Because if you have a well-trained police department that knows how to move and moves in an appropriate way, appropriate is the key to that, you're going to have a more confident group of policemen who know where they are and what kinds of capabilities they have when they go into a tough situation. And you're going to have community protected in the way it ought to be protected when something starts to bust loose. And this should be, your policies should be made public as you go along. And of course, there are other things too, the internal complaint procedures as well as external complaint procedures. An administrator should make himself available, and so should the rest of the department. The firearms policy should be clearly developed and clearly stated. I'm not going to tell you what I think it ought to be, but I think whatever it is, you're not only your own people ought to know about it, but community ought to know about it. And everyone have a piece of the action. And when you get to policies like that, the city administration better be locked into it too. So there's a clear understanding of what you have and how you, it just, I guess what I'm saying is that you just utilize and implement what I think are good administrative practices. It's kind of simple. Question is why we have the question is why we have block grant concept in LEAA. This is a tough fight that was fought in the Congress, and it was touch and go for a couple of years, whether it be block grant or direct grants to cities and counties and states. The Congress has made this decision.
What do
I think personally would be best? Well, I as a policeman, and I'm being as honest about this as I can, as a policeman, I've always taken the attitude that the law is there and it's my duty to implement that law. Insofar as it's a very bad kind of a thing, and I mean bad in a moral sense, then I'll take some position and try to do something about it. Otherwise, if the law is there, I enforce it. If the law is there and I administer it, I'll do it the way Congress wants it done, the way they said it should be done, even though they may not, I may not agree with it. I would rather, perhaps, it'd be easier administratively to deal with fewer entities. But there's a lot of strength in the other. So all I can say is that's Congress' decision, and Congress' decision reflects what they think your decision is. And so if there are any changes needed in that law, you talk to Washington, which is no closer, no farther away than your own representative and your own senator. Ma'am? The LEAA has, of course, contract compliance requirements under the Civil Rights Act. It has no requirements that state planning agencies have a certain balance. If there are any complaints about or any situations where there is an imbalance, then there suit can be brought by the civil rights people. I don't know what LEA is going to do about this. We're working with our civil rights people now, Assistant Attorney General Jerry Leonard, on working out a policy that we can implement. One of the problems with this is that there are a couple places in the Act itself where Congress has responded to some, certain kinds of pressures, and where they're specifically said, they've declared an intent that this act will not be used to create a certain balance in police departments, for instance. Now, that kind of thing is in there, and Congress will have to take it out. But even with that in there, we're trying to develop a policy that will that we can implement without having to throw back in our face so that we can get more equal employment. Yes, sir. We're now setting up a National Statistics Center. The first kinds of information and data will go on there will have to do with the correction of the offender. But it's your system, and as it gets underway, you as policemen can have on that what you want. It's going to take time to set up the system. And we, the other part of it is we have the obligation to publish not only statistics but other advances and bright ideas in a particular field. Now, I'd like to stay here all night, but I think you have some other business to take care of too in about 8 o'clock.